With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Introducing possibly the ultimate recording solution for guitarists everywhere, the Two Notes Tapter X. Playing your tube amp in a great sounding room with an exceptional choice of perfectly matched speaker cabinet and microphones is truly joyous and an unparalleled experience. The Torpedo Tapter X is for tube amp lovers who crave this every time they play, no matter the environment. Play your tube amp at its sweet spot and control your volume with the attenuator anywhere. You can even enjoy your 100-watt rig in silence with an immersive headphone experience. Fed up with lifting heavy cabinets, inconsistent sound and stage volume issues? Go direct to the PA and audio interface with studio-grade cabinet simulations. Wish to explore a legendary backline of speaker cabinets and microphones? Pair Torpedo Tapter X with your phone, tablet or computer using Torpedo Remote. No other compact reactive load box offers such universal control of the miking chain. And with dual miking per cabinet, you may never need to use a real mic again. Check out the Two Notes Torpedo Tapter X at 2-notes.com. Speak to a lot of Nashville session greats about their favorite overdrive pedal, and plenty will point to one box, the ODR1 from Nobels. Fast forward to 2020, and the original 1993 releases had a few tweaks to introduce the ODR1 BC. This legendary drive pedal now includes a built-in bass cut, allowing the player to tame some of that wild low end, while single coil users can still access the harmonically rich full range of the ODR1. There really has never been a better time to own this absolute cult classic transparent overdrive pedal to deliver creamy natural overdrive, everything from pushed clean amp tones to gain filled stacks. This legendary pedal is guaranteed to be a big part of your sound. Available from all good guitar shops or visit nobels.de for more info. Hola, bienvenidos al Guitar Nerds Podcast. Soy tu anfitrión Joe Branton, me acompañan Matt Knight,
Pogs or Tazos,
Mark Packham,
sure,
bien J. Cross.
Hola.
Hola, amigos. Yeah, that's right. It's time for the Spanish-speaking version of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. So I think from this point on, everyone, we should do it just in Spanish, okay?
I think you might be on your own on that one, fella.
And that is the end of this week's Guitar Nerds Podcast.
Fine. Well, yes, welcome. Welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, listener. On to the third week of me doing intros in different languages. I plan on completing all the world's languages.
Completing them?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Good to know.
Yes, that's right. I'm going to do an intro in everyone. Anyway,
I'd like to hear it in Welsh. That's the one I'd like to hear.
There you go. Next week will be Welsh. We will be doing Welsh. That'll be good.
Are you are you just Google translating these, or are people actually sending them in?
I have like a Spanish mate and a French mate, but I've got a Finnish mate.
Did we do Polish last week?
Oh yeah, that was courtesy of a podcast listener.
I think basically, if you can speak a language other than English, then please do send in translations for the intro. Yeah,
absolutely, and or even longer sections. Yeah,
I think you know, at a time when everyone's scrabbling to hold on to podcast listeners because no one is commuting, I think maybe doing the intro in a language that I would say the majority of our listeners won't be able to understand. It's probably not the best business decision we could possibly make.
No. Okay, so popular languages only. Okay, there you go, listener. You heard it here first. Anyway, on this this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about lots of things because a lot of us have bought new stuff. And there is a little bit of cool, exciting guitar news. But first of all, we should introduce our new patrons who have joined the Guitar Nerds podcast Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Thank you for supporting us, Will Ford, Joe Palmer, and Peter Kirk, who upgraded his tierage. You too, listener, can check us out on patreon.com/guitar nerds and join at the $5 or $10 tier for loads of extra stuff. Or, you know, just join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, where there is discussion aplenty.
And over 500 episodes on the Patreon. That's a lot. It's a lot.
That's a lot of content. At the moment, over on the Patreon, we're airing to it's going to be the second episode of Mark's new solo series, Gear There and Everywhere, his series all about the Beatles gear.
I enjoyed making this one. It's a McCartney focused episode, which, as you know,
you love McCartney.
Yeah, I know, is my thing. Yeah, it's good. Lots of kind of isolated audio available for McCartney
like
stuff.
That.
So you really not only do you hear the kind of his ridiculous playing, but you also hear like the instruments as well. So yeah, if that's kind of your thing, getting super analytical about Beatles bass tones, which I realise is fairly niche, then the Patreon episode is good fun this week.
Oh, that does sound good. Do you know I did my music A-level on McCartney bass lines?
I believe you've told us that before, yeah.
I probably have told you that before, yes.
What mark did you get? Packham.
I was waiting for that one.
I did it as like a, I did it like with performing arts as like a double thing, and unfortunately my performance in performing arts was I got an ungraded for they didn't appreciate my
what happened, did they show up to a polymath gig or something, because I'm not surprised.
No, the music side was really good.
I'd give
good.
You a U as well, mate. I've got to be honest.
I was definitely the best one when it came to in out of all the people taking that A level. Like
so everyone else failed?
No. In music, I'm saying I was the best one. Like my McCartney bass.
How
were
bad must
on
the
point.
Performance have been then?
No,
if like
you had to do
if the music was really good,
no,
but you got a U.
No,
the
you're misunderstanding.
Was the U?
You're misunderstanding. I got a U for performing arts, which brought down my music A level to a C. But because it was a joint thing, but
right.
I got good marks for the music performance, but it was the acting that brought me down. I got an ungraded for my acting
performance.
Weren't
you like only like moments away from being a child actor at this point?
Yeah,
you'd already been an actor. How did you fail the acting point?
I know. I got really into Chris Morris and The Day to Day, and I did a sketch show inspired by that. And I think maybe it was people were expecting, you know, proper acting, and instead I was just making.
Had you been asked to like read out a couple of
jokes.
Shakespearean sonnets or something? And actually, what you did was make some jokes about like people who drink beers or something like that.
Yeah, it was definitely. It was a bit more not safe for work or school than that.
Did you promise them a performance of Dark Side of the Moon and they didn't get what they were expecting?
We'll just say that it wasn't very good.
Yeah, gathered that.
There was some nudity and like I was wearing just a Mac.
That's
at
what I'm
one
saying.
Point.
Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Yeah, oh, yeah. There was that, and I think that was what got me the bad marks. But
I thought my performance in year 11 classroom. Please go home.
I think my performance of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, however, was excellent. I did all of Sergeant Pepper's. That was my thing. All of the bass lines from Sergeant Pepper's. It was good album.
It's like an hour and a half or something.
Yeah, I think it was like a medley. It wasn't like the entire thing, but it was pretty good. Anyway,
Before you move on, Mark, did you do any like music stuff at school? Because I know Matt, you went to BIM and you know got a degree in playing guitar.
A degree?
Well, whatever it was that
I got.
You got
a diploma.
A diploma in playing guitar. Did
Jay,
you?
It sounds awful.
I believe you're talking to someone with an A star GCSE in music. So,
oh, you did? Did you?
You know, big. I did a couple of bits on guitar. I did a cover of Strange Glue by Catatonia. That was one of the things that I did.
Okay.
I also did
some Strange Glue.
I also did a saxophone solo piece.
What?
Yeah.
You play the saxophone?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Saxophone.
That's what I did.
I'm deleting everything off of the podcast notes for this week. We're just going to talk about this. Mark Packham, saxophone.
So there's a story behind it, right? When I was in, wait, what's the last year of junior school? Year six.
Yeah.
Right, I had this mate called Jim West, not from Wild Wild West.
Desperado, Rough Rider.
He was someone else called Jim West.
So unfortunate.
He was either a desperado or a rough rider. He probably would have been about 12 or 13 when that film came out, and I imagine his life
gutted
was hell.
Gutted.
Anyway, he told me that when you go up to what we then called the big school, i.e. secondary school, that you had to do an instrument. And I was like, well, I don't know how to play anything, and the only instrument we've got around the house is we've got this old saxophone that my dad like bought off a guy in a pub or something. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll just learn that then. So I started... I signed up for lessons, I think, before I went to school, because I was like, well, everyone's got to do it. And then turned up and it was like, okay, no, you don't have to do this. But I persevered with it. But like, playing the saxophone is great fun, but it also means you can't sing. And when you're sort of angsty 14-year-old, playing the saxophone is probably not the best way to, you know, express your ideas. So that's why I dropped the saxophone and got into guitar. But for GCSE... You had to do two instruments, and I couldn't play piano or drums or anything. So I was like, okay, I'll get the saxophone back out. I sort of remember how to play it. I'll do that, which is why I did saxophone and guitar for my GCSE.
Wow.
But there is on the internet somewhere a video of...
You playing Careless Whisper with no shirt?
No. Like a talent... That would be good. A talent show where I'm playing bass... doing Green Onions in my school talent show.
That is tasteful.
With a band... made up of some people that I still knock around with now. So that was like our big musical thing in our last year of school.
Do you still own the saxophone?
I think my dad's still got it somewhere. Yeah, I think we sort of figured out that it was actually worth like quite a lot of money. So I think we've just held on to it. And
would you be willing to play some saxophone in some capacity for guitar nerds?
If the world wasn't like... You know, it's basically impossible for me to go to my parents at the moment, so I probably can't retrieve it. But keep it in mind for post-pandemic fun.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right. Post-pandemic saxophone. You heard Bloody it here lovely. First, listener. Yeah, that would be great. Anyway, Mark, let's talk about some guitar stuff, and let's stay with you, Mark, because you bought a new guitar.
I have indeed. It's finally happened. After months and months and months of talking about it on the podcast... you know, adding it to watch lists, you know, on terms of all the platforms I could possibly get one on. I finally bought an Epiphone Casino. And not only have I bought an Epiphone Casino, I've bought two Epiphone Casinos.
Oh, you did buy two?
Yeah. So basically what happened was I was messaging a guy about a natural kind of early one. So it's Peerless Factory. In Korea. And so for those who don't know, they were kind of made in the Peerless Factory, then they were made in the Unsung Factory, and then they moved to Chinese Factory. So Unsung and Peerless both in Korea. So I was messaging a guy about one, an early one, which are the kind of sought after ones, a natural one from the Peerless Factory, and that sort of went cold. So I was like, okay, well, I've lost out on that one. And then another one came up, a Sunburst one, slightly later from the Unsung Factory. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just get that. And anyway, the end of last week, got that delivered. It's absolutely fantastic. I'd forgotten just how good the build quality is on them. And, you know, I'm in this place now where I'm like, at home, I just want to play hollow body guitars because I don't want to play full acoustics. It's too loud for the house. But I've got the Dan Electro, and now I've got this Casino where I'm like, this is the perfect thing for me to play in the living room. So yeah, this Sunburst Casino is fantastic. And it needed a little bit of work. The plate was off it, but it comes with the original plate. It needed like, it had some weird like Fender amp knobs as the controls. So I've bought some, you know, Gibson style ones and put those back on. But while that's all happened, I've also bought the fella came back to me about this natural one. So tomorrow, or the day that you're hearing this, or the day before you're hearing this, the natural one will be delivered as well. And my plan is to just put them up against each other and find out. I can't really justify having both as much as I want to. So I'm going to, yeah, just like compare them, and then I'm going to keep the best one and probably move the other one on. Although that will be quite painful, I think. So, you know, the Sunburst one, my feeling is that the natural one is going to play better and feel better because it's...
But you prefer the look of the Sunburst.
Well, I mean, I'm not actually that fussed, but I think I'm going to feel bad about getting rid of the Sunburst one, because the Sunburst one is really good. But my feeling is that the natural one is going to be better. So
you think there's that much difference between the two factories?
Yeah.
Is it just because it's an earlier model as well?
The Peerless ones are sort of, I guess, like renowned as being the best one of this sort of era of casino. So, yeah, I mean...
So what year are they?
So
are they
the... I believe the Peerless one is 2004, and the Sunburst one that I've got, I believe, is 2009.
Right.
I would need to check that. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, but that is ringing true for me. So, yeah, I mean, the plan is that I'm going to get both of them, test them out for the rest of this week, and then if I decide, look, one of these is better than the other, then it's going to go. The problem I'm going to have is, like, what if they're both just as good as each other and they both look great? Then I've got to make a decision about which one goes. And to be honest, it would probably be the natural one, because it's a Peerless one, they're worth a bit more money. So
yeah,
it's going to be good. It's going to be a great week. I've got two Epiphone casinos to play for a week, and then I need to make a decision, like, which of these am I going to keep? But yeah, I mean, I only plugged it in for maybe half an hour over the weekend. I've just been playing it unplugged, and it sounds amazing. Feels
were
great.
Were you plugging into the Boss Katana?
Yeah. I actually restrung it with... Jay, you gave me a set of Fender 10s a little while ago. I can't remember what they were called.
The Classic Core strings.
Classic Core.
yes.
They feel really nice.
Yeah, so those are some strings that Fender brought out the start of this year, or maybe end of last year, I can't remember, but they're round core rather than hex core, so there's not actually that many round core strings on the market at the moment, I don't think. I mean, GHS do the Boomers, and a lot of kind of more boutique companies do round core, so like Gabriel Tenorio and Newtone do round core as well. But it's just a more traditional way of doing strings. So the hex core came along, I think, in the late 60s or mid 60s was when hex core came along. And the hex core is just, it's a bit stronger, because obviously a hexagon is two triangles. So you get a lot more stability from the actual string. But with round core, they sound a little bit, I don't know, they seem to sound a little bit more resonant, and they're a little bit, I find them a little bit easier to bend, and I they're just a bit different, and they're fun and cool, and yeah, I really like them. I think they're very cool.
Yeah, and you know, I am actually quite fussy when it comes to strings, you know, like Ernie Ball is normally my preference, but as you'd given me these, I was like, yeah, Jay's a nice guy, I'll give it a go, I guess. And yeah, they're really nice, really good. So yeah, I'm really happy with how the Sunburst one is playing. Let's see where we get to. I'll report back next week as to which one's going to stay and which is going to go.
Oh, that is exciting.
Speaking of strings, speaking of those, I really want to try and get a hold of some of the Gabriel Tenorio strings.
I have not heard of Gabriel Tenorio.
So Gabriel Tenorio is a geezer. I met Gabriel a couple of times when we've been over at NAMM. He hosts a barbecue every year, and I've been to the last couple of those, and he's wicked. But he runs a string company, and he hand winds all of his strings, and they sell out immediately. But I did see that James's Home of Tone have got some, and that's the only place in the UK that I found them, so I think I'm going to try and grab some of those probably before this episode goes out, because otherwise they might disappear quickly. But yeah, Gabriel Tenorio, really worth following on Instagram. Just the way that he does stuff is really cool, really interesting, and I think he'd be someone who'd be really good to get on the podcast as well, just because I find strings very interesting, and he has like made a machine himself to wind the strings. And I think it would be really cool to talk to him about that, and yeah, just find out what he's done. But yeah, the reviews that people give about those strings are really, really cool. So I'd really like to check him out.
Yeah, that's cool. Strings are interesting and exciting.
You were on a bit of a string odyssey this week, weren't you?
Oh, I was. Yeah, yeah. I got really into strings this week. Well, you know, I've been fixing up my 1977 Fender Music Master bass. So this bass, when it got, I spoke about it at the time, but when it got delivered to me, it was put in the post in a bin liner. So by the time it got to me, it wasn't in fantastic condition, and it really hadn't been looked after anyway. So the bridge was rusted to the point of collapse, so you couldn't really adjust anything. So I needed to change the bridge. Problem is, Music Master bridges, you know, pretty hard to come by, because they're, you know, the modern incarnation of the Music Master is the Bronco, and it's a different bridge. The bridge is really kind of its own thing. So hard to find an actual replacement for it. And I didn't want to change the look. I wanted a cool old looking Music Master. So I didn't want to redrill something else. So, and it also runs on it has those just two saddles for the four strings. So I had to find a bridge, a bass bridge with two saddles, and buy that, and then take the saddles off and fit them to the bridge of the Music Master. It was a little bit complicated. Surprisingly hard to find a bass bridge with two saddles. I looked around for some time, but there's nothing in the Fender catalogue anymore. I eventually found some new old stock of one from a brand that did some lovely brass ones, so that was good. I was able to sort of change that in. Then the tuners definitely need changing, because they're a little bit threaded, they're quite hard to turn, but I'll leave that for now. The pickup, obviously, Music Master basses. I don't know, do you guys know much about Music Master basses?
Yeah, I mean, only that they've got that kind of like plastic tele neck pickup in there.
It's, well, yes, yeah, you're almost right. Not quite a tele pickup, it's a strap pickup. So the Music Master, when they started making them in the early 70s, were very, very much Fender making a bass guitar from spare parts that they had lying around. So they took the Mustang body shape and neck, but then they took, it's a strap pickup. It's the middle pickup from a Strat. So if you take the plastic cover off of a Music Master bass from the 70s, it will have six pole pieces in the top, which obviously isn't actually fantastically voiced for bass. Probably quite good at being aggressive, but
sounds ideal. I don't know what you're talking about. It sounds ideal.
well, to be honest, I was so excited about playing it when I first got this bass. The first thing I did was made the bridge just about usable, got some strings on there, and took it to a practice. And there was just like not a lot of low end, like not a lot of resonance going on the sort of low string. So I'm ordering. I've been in debate of who to go for. For a custom Music Master pickup, there are quite a few options out there, because I was thinking I could go Sun Bear again. I went with Sun Bear for my pickup for my Epiphone EB1, but then Mojo pickups do a replacement for the Music Master bass that's supposed to, you know, be sort of louder, brasher, brighter. Then you've got the Creamery, which do quite a comprehensive replacement pickup for the Music Master, where you can choose various things about, you know, you can have that vintage thread around the outsides, or you can have it ribbon, you can choose the color, you can even have sort of relict tops to the pickup to make it sit in line with your sort of old beat up instrument, which is quite cool. And you can choose between Alnico 2 and Alnico 5, so you go for 2 if you want like a warmer, thicker sound, which is quite cool. And then you've got McNelly's pickups, which James's Home of Tone again where they've tried to fit a humbucking pickup into that tiny little space that is a Music Master bass pickup. They've tried to fit one in there, which it does look very cool, but retails about twice the price of most other companies doing Music Master bass pickup replacement. So it's kind of like, what do I go for? Anyway, the whole point of this was I was supposed to be talking about strings. I want to get some heavy gauge flat wounds for this bass. So I'm going through a flat wound.
Heavy gauge, but short scale
flat wounds.
Be prepared to spend £200.
That's it. No one does. When it comes to short scales, it always really annoys me because when something's short scale, it means that the strings are floppier anyway. So why the gauges of bass string for short scale tend to be lighter than they are for a standard scale? It's just beyond me. I just don't know who wants their strings to be so floppy that they can't play quickly. It doesn't make sense. You also can't get out of E standard, which is very annoying. So, I was looking around at where I can go, and one company came up that does do a heavy tension, sort of 53 to 110.
Describes this podcast a lot of the time, heavy tension.
Yes, quite. Which is Labella. So Labella do a set of flat round strings designed perfectly after a 1953 set of Fender flat rounds. They are a complete rebuild of that, but in a heavy gauge. And you can pick those up for £50.
That's a lot for a set of strings.
It's a lot of strings.
But having said that, flat wounds will last you forever until you decide to change them.
Exactly. So it's kind of, it's an investment. Like, and it wouldn't be the first time I spent a lot of money on strings from Labella. I spent £70 on a set of bass six strings from them once. So, I think £50 is okay. I'm just sort of, I'm building up to it because I realise that this Music Master bass is actually, in small things that I've had to purchase, cost me almost as much as I paid for the bass now in buying little bits. And like another £50 on a set of strings just puts it at this point where I'm like, okay, because I got this bass obviously super cheap, but now with the amount of things I've done to it, it's the same as if I'd bought a good one. So it's moderately annoying. Anyway, sorry for that slight sort of strings tangent.
Joe. Do not ever, ever apologise for a tangent about guitar accessories.
No, that's true. Continue on strings. Labella, Labella just guitar bass strings predominantly?
I couldn't tell you.
I've only ever heard of them as bass strings.
They're obviously best known for their flat wounds, and I know that obviously you can buy guitar flat wound strings. So, yeah, potentially. I've never seen a set of Labella guitar strings.
Would you ever would you invest money in a set of guitar strings in the same way that you would in bass strings?
I wouldn't invest that much in a set of guitar strings, because I like the sound of bass strings for about 5 minutes after you put them on, and then just take them off, put a new set on fresh.
Right.
So I'm on the Labella website at the moment. They do 15 different types of electric guitar strings, let alone gauges. Just 15 different. So there's 12 string sets, 7 string sets, baritone, basics, benders, Criterion, double ball end, drop tune, Hellcat, jazz flats, jazz tapes in black, tapes in white, roller wounds, which I've never heard of, and vapor shield. Just electric.
I'd imagine roller wound are similar to those, what were they called? Half wounds or something. Wounds, maybe. Where they're basically, it's like a round wound string, but they're wound at such high tension, the actual windings, that it's almost like having a flat wound string. I wonder if it's that.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
Joe, just have you also checked out, while you were talking about Labella, I was googling what is the most expensive guitar string, which led me to find which is a brand I have heard of, just never ever ever think about them for guitar strings, is Tomastic strings. They actually do some heavy wound bass flat wounds, but they also do some heavy George Benson signature strings, which are £30 a set.
Tomastics were what was on the
Pino Palladino.
I thought they were Labellas on that.
No, they were Tomastics. And yeah, they were expensive.
Tomastics are what Matt Allram put on his short scale Fidelity bass. And I did think about Tomastics, but they don't actually do a heavy enough gauge for me in short scale.
Wow. Okay. Well, this conversation has just led me to, I'm just going to go and spend 20 quid on a set of strings, on Gabriel Tenorio strings from James Time of Time.
Do it.
They don't have any 11s, which is annoying, because I did want to put some 11s on my Mustang, but it's got 10s on it at the moment, so I'll just stick with the 10s for now.
You know, I was reading about Dick Dale's Stratocaster today. Did you know it came with 16s?
What?
Yeah. I like, that is definitely a thing that I read. I believe
I also
I'm right.
Didn't know he. Right, okay.
Yeah. The 16s. Yeah.
16 to what, though?
Okay, let's.
Eight.
Let me find out.
16's the bass string.
Yeah, yeah, the super.
Because, yeah, sometimes you get those weird, like, string gauges where people don't really like. They.
Here we are.
Like, bizarrely even across the.
Balanced tension, like the D'Addario balanced tension. In fact, Labella do balanced tension sets. I think that's why they're sort of a weird like 53 to 110 on those bass strings, because they do like this whole balance thing. Anyway, yeah, Dick Dale's set was 16, 18, 20, 39, 49, 60.
Crikey.
Wow.
On a strat.
Yeah,
he must have had to glue that down.
Yeah. So
to be fair,
he can
I don't
get
think he
that
ever
tremolo
bent the
picking. No,
no,
exactly.
No.
It's just so he can have that tremolo picking all the time. But yeah, what an absolutely crazy gauge of string.
I'm into it. I might start putting that on everything.
The
I think the Dan Electro I've got might actually just snap in half if you put
There's also that crazy video of Dick Dale playing with his son, and his son makes mistakes, so his son decides to like scissor kick his dad like mid stage performance. It's one of the most bizarre things.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Dick Dale and his son doing... that song.
Yeah,
and
that's
it. I couldn't think of the name. And I think the son makes a mistake. So like Dick Dale like stops and like shouts at him. The song's still going on in the background. So and then he turns round to like play another part, and his son turns around and does like a scissor kick like right next to his face.
That's very weird.
Yeah, it is very weird. But I'm just looking at his guitar, it's just the best looking guitar. That sort of like rosewood fretboard, gold sparkle,
gold sparkle strat. Yeah, with the reversed strat pickup as well for his upside down playing style.
Yeah,
That's the other thing, isn't it? Of course, the strings are on back to front. On the Dick Dale.
Yeah, and I mean, he used...
The Beast, so that's what he called his guitar, wasn't it? The Beast.
Yeah, and he used Dual Showmans, which are super loud, with two JBL 15-inch speakers. The thing must have been so loud, unbelievably loud.
You know, don't forget that he designed that Fender, the high-powered 100-watt amp with Leo Fender.
Which one? The high-powered twin? No, it must have been the Dual Showman, because they are really, really high powered.
Oh, yeah. With two 15-inch speakers. Yeah.
I didn't realise that was designed in conjunction with Dick Dale. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also didn't realise that his wiring was basically just a volume control.
So we need, Matty. So we
It's all he had. Volume control, need. Just pretty much wired straight to the output jack. Is that it? I was having a look at some of the mods that he did here. Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Sort of modded the five-way switch to add some in-betweens. Very bizarre. Very bizarre guitar. And I'd imagine incredibly loud if anyone ever got to see him live. Let us know. But those Jewel Showmans are... I think... Didn't we have a Gary Moore second-hand Jewel Showman in for a little while? I think it was a Jewel Showman.
One that he'd played?
No. I tell you what we had. We had, because friend of the podcast, Sparky Rogers, had bought it. It was the Trace Elliott Speed Twin that was Gary Moore's for a little bit, I think in the 90s. And it had his... which was, I think, similar to the Jewel Showman, had all of his sounds etched on it in white chalk. All of the knobs were just set to 10. Just brilliant. It's like, yeah, just remember my settings, yeah? Everything on 10.
Guitar player once named Dick Dale the father of heavy metal.
This episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Engel and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergold Guitars. Be your own original. One of the most popular Ernie Ball Music Man models, the John Petrucci Majesty, is being expanded with four brand new striking finishes. Now offered in Pink Sand, Red Phoenix, Smoked Pearl, and Ember Glow, the 2020 Majesty features a lightweight Akume body, signature DiMarzio Rainmaker and Dreamcatcher pickups, and an onboard piezo bridge system that gives the guitar a focused and highly versatile palette of tones. Head to music-man.com to learn more. That's music-man. Now, back to the show.
Yeah?
Who did?
Guitar Player Magazine.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough.
One of the guys that I work with has just got into playing guitar. He's a piano player. And he got the only reason he bought a guitar is because he heard ZZ Top for the first time. It's just like, Billy Gibbons is amazing. I need to learn to play guitar. And I reminded him that Jimi Hendrix once said that Billy Gibbons was the best guitar player on the planet.
Really?
Yeah.
And that was when he was very young as well.
Yeah.
Because they talk about it in that documentary that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Which is really good. And I really urge people to go and watch it. Because like I said, I mean, I didn't really know anything about ZZ Top. But they are super interesting fellas. And the story is really, really cool. It's really cool. And yeah, Hendrix absolutely loved Billy Gibbons. And, you know, quite rightly, because he's an absolutely rocking dude by the sounds of things.
You get a few odd ones like that. I think once Eddie Van Halen in the 80s said in Guitar Player magazine, the best guitar player on the planet to him was Alan Holdsworth.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was just like, yeah. Because at that time, Eddie Van Halen was considered the best guitarist, you know, out there. Everyone wanted to play like him. And he was like, nah, just go and listen to Alan Holdsworth, this fella from Top North who painted his own beer pump.
Look how many frets this chord that he plays goes across.
Yeah, if anyone listening has never gone onto YouTube and watched the Alan Holdsworth instructional DVD, it is just, it's incredible. The guy invented his own theory, like his own scales. He was just like, yeah, I think these notes sound good over these chords, so I've called this scale the X2 scale. It's like, it's like no relevance to like any other music whatsoever. But it is quite funny to watch. And he is an amazing guitar player.
Yeah. What an absolute hero. And Matt Knight, you you also bought something new this week.
I did. I have been going down a Make Gooderer journey, I guess, in some ways. There's so many Make Gooderers out there. And there was a product that I saw pop up quite a few times at the Birmingham Guitar Show. And it sort of caught my eye and turned out a few other people I know use it or have used similar. And this is the Audio Kitchen Small Trees, or The Small Trees. So Audio Kitchen, for those who don't know, are a amp manufacturer based in London. They build a small range of boutique amps, including the Chopper series, the Little Chopper and the Big Chopper, which I believe the Little Chopper, I think Dave Grohl or someone similar got pictured buying one of those. Just, you know, really simple control, sort of really high-end, well-built amplifiers that just, like, you know, really deliver just an awesome sound. And then since then, they've built a pedal called the Big Trees, which is a 2.5-watt pedal. Well, it's actually, you can use it as a pedal, so you can use it in line, or you can go out into a speaker. So it's got a preamp and then like a simple gain section with one EL84. And then he decided that so many people were requesting the preamp version, or just the preamp in a pedal, he made the Small Trees. So it's a single valve driven 16 dB boost and line driver. So when it's off, it's valve driven buffer basically, and when it's on, it's a class A boost. But it's all valve driven. And I spoke to Mikey Demas, who was using one. He was using one for recording. I think he was Joe, because I spoke to you about it, he said he was using one on one of his pedal boards at one point.
That's right. Yeah. He used one for demos at a show. I think he was using kind of that as the amp and then a two notes cab. What was their
Cab M. Yeah.
And then running his pedals into that as kind of like a portable amplifier.
And I was speaking to Stuart Tate from Tate Effects. He was using one as well, I think, for a similar thing, demos at shows. And then I saw Andy Ferris from the Guitar Geek YouTube channel was using one to run into his Helix as like his mobile demo rig, so he could like play guitars and get like a really good sound, you know, while he was filming it. So I was just like, I'm into this. I'm into the idea of having, I don't think I've ever had a valve driven pedal before. I mean, there's not obviously a million out there. Electro Harmonics are the ones that most people know, but I was like, I'm really into having a really good, just like, class A boost, like a really good Make Gooderer on my pedal board. And I sold a bunch of stuff on eBay and I was just like, oh, I'm just gonna get one. And it arrived today and I ran out of time to plug it in just before the podcast.
Oh,
but I'm gonna demo it, and I might try and do, I've been spent the week or just before the weekend shooting a few videos at home. And getting a really good sound direct into my interface and recording via OBS. So I'm going to try and do a couple of little demos, I think, as a little test and put them up in the...
What's your virtual amp then, Matt? What are you using to...
I am using Nextone, Boss Nextone at the moment.
Right. So are you just running out of the direct amp?
I'm running out of the line.
Because it's got a cab sim on it, the direct
amp.
Nextone.
Yeah, so I'm running that at the moment. Part of getting the Small Trees is I was really keen to use that as the preamp and then run into the Origin Effects Revival Trem, which is obviously like the power amp section of a
which you 62. Also recently bought. We didn't talk about this.
No, we didn't. Didn't we?
I decided.
Well, we spoke about it a lot when I tried it, and it was amazing. And
but he liked it so much that he bought it.
I liked it so much I bought it.
In fact, we never even managed to send it back to them.
So I've been using the Nextone, and it's been great. The reason I went for the Nextone was I really wanted to dial in an amp that was really close to my Morgan PR12, which is like a Princeton, because it's got the 6V6 valve type power amp on there. And I've been messing around using that for recording, and the sound's been great because the feel is there. And then just, straight into headphones. It's one of the first times that I've gone lying out and not heard the sound from a speaker and gone, Because I normally hate hearing stuff through monitors. There's just something about playing into a guitar cab that's just so much better. But yeah, I was keen to just try this and use it as, try and do a bit more recording at home. I was keen to have this as like a guitar preamp as well, and then maybe try out some software or run it directly into the effects loop return of the Nextone, so I can use the analog power amps of the Nextone but have like a valve preamp. I was like, thought it'd be a really good experiment. And then for the pedal board, just kind of leave it on as a always on make gooder, basically.
Cool.
I'll try and do some demos for the old Facebook.
Yeah, you definitely should. Now, the day that this is airing properly on Wednesday for everyone else is my 36th birthday.
That's too old.
Happy birthday!
Thanks. But of course, now that I can't go out on some massive weekend long bender where I see how much of everything I can consume. I'm sort of stuck here, so I was like, well, maybe I should buy a guitar. So but I can't decide. I can't make a decision. I'm interested in suggestions is what I want. I want them from you guys, maybe listeners as well, if you've got some suggestions, because I'll make a decision at some point this week. But I'm still like, is it a Gibson Melody Maker? I could get one of the reissues of those for quite cheap. They go for around £500.
So you're talking guitar rather than bass?
Yeah, because I'm really, really happy with the 69P bass and the little Music Master that I'm working on at the moment.
Yeah.
So that would be
And the 12 other basses that you own.
Oh yeah, obviously. Yeah, there's the three jazz basses, the other P bass, the bass six, the three acoustics, and then all of the Harlequin guitar stock. Oh, and a Telecaster and a Jaguar that I found in a cupboard that I forgot about. and the Stonefield, of course, as well.
So yeah, I mean, that's the only gig and bass you'll ever need, right?
Absolutely, yeah, it is. So, I'm quite happy with basses at the moment, but guitar wise, I was like, I sold my Baja Telecaster. I'm just basically using the ES175 for everything. I was like, I do kind of want a solid body thing. So, I tell you what was the problem actually, because I wanted, I had the Baja Telecaster, and I was like, I don't need this because Harlequin Guitar Club had like two Butterscotch Tellies, in stock, really nice sort of Japanese tellies. One was a 72 reissue, one was a 52 reissue. What happens as soon as I sell the Baja?
I don't know.
They sell as well. So, I end up in this telly-less situation. So I was like, part of me is like, maybe I could get like one of those Classic Vibe Esquires. Have they been discontinued now, J. Cross? Were they just FSR?
What's that, sorry?
The Classic Vibe Esquires.
They were a limited run. I don't know whether there's any still available. They were pretty limited.
I think I maybe
they
look
so good
there.
As well. The colours they just did look amazing. Great.
Well, I just want Butterscotch. But so it's like, do I hunt out one of those? Do I go for a Gibson Melody Maker reissue? Do you remember those Godins that we were looking at a while ago? They were super cool. Yeah, they were really cool. So, I'm kind of there. I'm like, I don't know. What do I get?
What, just any guitar?
Well, if you actually want one of those classic Vibe Esquires, Anderson still have stock, because I've also been eyeing up the Surf Green one and going, they look absolutely banging.
Yeah, they do look fantastic.
Put a high output pickup in the bridge that's coil tappable. Relicate a little bit. Make it top bound only. You know, you got yourself, you know, my dream guitar.
Got yourself a stew going.
Got yourself. Yeah. I mean, one guitar that stands out for me that I think you could get for that sort of money, SG Special Faded.
Yeah.
I just think that's a great guitar.
Yeah,
really,
honestly, I still regret selling that one that I sold fairly recently. They're really good, Joe. They are very good.
I do agree. They are very good. That's maybe the other caveat, is I think it really has to be classically styled, and it's that satin feel on those specials for me. I just I can't get behind. I'd have to T-cut the whole thing as soon as I got it.
Oh no, but they just wear in beautifully over time. Like if you play like Matty's,
they
one,
definitely do.
Matty's one just feels really good.
Yeah. Matt's does feel good. It is good, but I guess maybe that's not fun enough or weird enough for me. It's a bit too. I need it to be odd. But we'll see. I'll find something.
What about Harmony?
Harmony's a good shout, but it would have to be an old Harmony. The new ones are sort of above, you know, the sort of random birthday splurge.
Yeah, that's true.
Balance. But yeah, the old ones are pretty cool. But I guess old Harmonies go for around 650. It definitely ticks my box of being cool on old and vintage. But of course, when you're around that price point, you're also in the sort of reverend price point.
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, Although, I'd always give a shout out to the reverend guitars.
Yeah. Yeah. They are cool, but I don't know. Actually, you know, maybe you were onto something there with the old Harmony. I'm gonna have a look at that. Anyway, that's, you know, I'll take suggestions from the listeners anyway on the facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Help me pick a birthday guitar as I hurtle towards 40.
Just looking on some secondhand sites right now. There is a place in the UK selling, and I've never seen one of these, and I want it so bad. Fender Competition Made in Japan FSR Traditional Surf Green with pink racing stripes.
What?
What?
That is amazing.
Absolutely incredible. It's a limited run made by Fender Japan in 2018 and now discontinued. Yeah, Surf Green with pink competition stripe. I'm in.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
right. Okay. Yeah, I don't really remember.
Jay's
that.
Out straight away.
No. Not at all. In fact, me and Mark were talking about strats this weekend, and like, I'm still I've got half an eye on a strat. Thankfully, I'm all right for the moment. I borrowed something from work before.
I'll tell
we
you
went
who
on
has
lockdown, but
some killer strats in the moment. I got the GAC newsletter, and they've had a couple of Shell Pink custom shops turn up that look amazing.
That sounds awesome. Maybe I want another Strat, because I did have three before and then sold them all.
at least there's logic behind me buying two casinos. You know, it's like there's a reason I'm doing it. There's absolutely no need for you to have owned three Strats.
Yeah, well, I wanted a 50s and a 60s one. And then a road worn one.
Oh, wait, have
cheap.
You not got any of those anymore?
No, I sold them all. All my strats are gone.
You're a maniac.
Yeah. Yeah. I went through a big sort of Gibson only phase, so I sold all my Fenders, and now I'm sort of coming back around a little bit. So I imagine I'll be buying lots of Fender things over the next little while. I think that's the inevitable end result here.
You just need to, like, think things through before you do them, rather than
does
just
that sound
like
Joe, yes, Branton? Just
no,
just
of course it doesn't.
Just
does
go
that
in.
Sound like Joe Branton?
Yeah, I know. It's just half the time I'm really focused on the aesthetic, and that's when I want Gibson stuff. And then half the time I'm really focused on the sound, and that's when I'm like in a Fender mood. So it depends which thing I'm in.
I had a bit of a realization when I, you know, this casino arrived. I was looking at the guitars that I've got, and I was like, what do I like in guitars? Well, I like, you know, I like kind of pastel colours, and I like maple necks. And what I've got is two guitars sat there that are sunburst with a rosewood neck, and they're both really good. So, you know, just these preconceived notions of what you like, I think if you find the right guitar, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think that's ever going to be true for me. I think I will continue to go through life just buying and selling guitars, you know, every other week, yeah. And never being happy, always being discontent, struggling to sleep because I can't stop thinking about what I should be purchasing next.
You've got a problem, basically.
Yeah, I do. Anyway, we should move on. We should do some news. Before we do, we should cover something that I mentioned to talk about at the start. This month, we are teaming up with Ashdown to bring you a double giveaway. So this is the last week you can enter our double giveaway. Our double giveaway is to win. There are two winners for this, and you can win an Ashdown Ant and an Ashdown Newt, both 200-watt pedal board-based. One's a guitar and one's a bass amplifier. Perfect solution for people using preamps or multi-effects and things like that. And, you know, in the case of the guitar one, the new, it's in this cool sort of metallic blue-green finish. They're in incredibly awesome bits of kit. They retail for like £400 a piece normally, which is actually very reasonable for a 200-watt, you know, pedal board amplifier. Anyway, but you can of course win one for free. So all you've got to do is visit our Facebook or Instagram, find the entry posts, and follow the steps to enter there. The competition's open worldwide, and we'll be announcing the winner right here on the podcast on the 10th of June. So definitely get involved in that. Let's do some news. First up. I guess actually Matt Knight will, or Jay Cross, or kind of all of you, should we talk about Echoline before we get into anything else?
Sure, yes. Why not?
Well, actually, Joe, I think I mentioned Echoline, the last time I mentioned it was in our Pedals That Made Us. I think we were talking about that before. I think they've popped up on the podcast a few times in the last few years, but they did win Gear of the Year back in 2016. The Roadrunner Overdrive, absolutely amazing, sort of dynamic, just one of the best overdrives I've ever heard. I know we really rated it for Gear of the Year, and we, you know, we spoke about the brand before. They had the Everest, and then about a year or 18 months ago, if not even slightly longer, they kind of sold all the remaining stock super cheap because they were like, there's a whole new bunch of stuff coming. I think we saw them at maybe the London Guitar Show, and they were like, yeah, there's no loads of new. And then they just went completely silent and haven't really popped up on our radar at all until today, when they posted on their Facebook page a brand new sort of cover image, and then their website now says new pedals coming in June 2020. So they've posted a picture of six pedals, some of which ones are already doing, like the Everest and the Roadrunner, but all in smaller enclosures. I contacted those guys. They've got back to me. They've given me some details, which obviously can't say until they want us to put them out, but all very exciting, I think. Finally, great to see this brand back. Really solid British band, a brand with some great pedals.
Yeah,
that we've
absolutely.
Always highly rated.
Yeah, it will be cool. So they're in completely new chassis as well, these pedals.
Yeah, I think they're just much smaller versions of...
Because they were huge before, weren't they?
They were pretty unwieldy. And these look far more like kind of quote-unquote regular guitar pedals, you know.
Yeah. Mm. Now, I think it's going to be great. I'm excited to see some more sort of... British guitar, you know, pedals out there, you know, and some sort of more boutique ones. I think it's great. I think it's, you know, there's a load of brands coming out from sort of our side of the pond, and it's really good to see those, especially after we rated them so highly, and then it was a shame they sort of disappeared, but they're back.
Yay. And speaking of British boutique pedals, Mark Packham, why don't you tell us about the Xander Circuitry Junipero?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we can probably all talk about it a little bit. So Xander Effects, you know, kind of friends of the show, and, you know, people that you often see Alex from Xander at British guitar shows. Great little brand. I think a lot of people know him for his Tape Echo, which the name has gone out of my brain completely.
Tape Deck.
The Tape Deck. Exactly that. And, you know, has been doing these great little pedals for a little while. They're kind of gaining a bit of a cult status, I guess, within the British sort of guitar community. You know, I know that he's been looking to do other types of pedals. He's done a lot of overdrives and stuff. And he
there's a lot of fuzzes and stuff.
Yeah, he's done some modulation stuff in the past, but this is very much a new take on it. The Junipero is a multi-modulation pedal. I guess in the vein of, you know, something like the Wampler Terraform, where it's, you know, a bunch of very good modulations all in one housing. So this offers vibrato, chorus, flanger, phaser, tremolo, and ring mod. I heard a version of it at a guitar show and was very impressed. That was a while ago, so I'm assuming it has moved on since then. I've not heard a demo of the latest one yet, although there are some available.
In fact, on the day that we're recording this, he did in fact do a live demonstration just before we started the podcast.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I can
see... With the launch of the pedal.
I can see that there is a couple of different demos available on his site, so I need to sit through and watch those. This kind of all got announced... was it actually announced today?
It was announced today.
Yeah. So I need to catch up on the demos and stuff. But from, you know, Alex's other pedals, I know that they're very, very good. I heard this a little while ago and I was pretty impressed. Control-wise on there, you've got rate, you've got depth, you've got control, which depends on which patch you're on, like which type of modulation you're on. Control will do something different. You've got tone for the wet signal, you've got total output volume, which is level, you've got a mix, and then you've got the 1-to-8 patch selector. And like I said, yeah, effects are chorus vibrato, multi-voice chorus, flanger, phaser, tremolo, harmonic tremolo, vibrato and tremolo, and ring modulator. So basically a whole bunch of stuff in there. Stereo in and outs. You've got 5 presets that I believe you can save to, and also fully MIDI compatible as well. So yeah, loads going on. Great to see a British builder just stepping away from just doing overdrives and fuzzes pretty much.
Yeah.
And this is obviously going into the world of slightly more complicated processing. And I think it is, yeah, as the one of the videos on here actually says, I think it is quite a big leap for the kind of smaller British brands. Really into it.
I watched one of the demos and there's a full 25 minute in-depth video from Xander as well. Read the manual before this,
of course.
You know. Got to read the manual. It's a great looking manual as well. I mean, Alex is also, I think, a graphic designer full time, because this is the crazy thing. It's not even his full time job. And he's like a one man operation. So, you know, fair play for him for, you know, taking, I think, the last 2 years of his life sort of having this in various forms and actually finally getting it out today. But yeah, I love the fact, yeah, you can have up to 128 presets via MIDI, expression in, MIDI's all over TRS. That's the way that people are moving to, rather than the kind of normal 5-pin DIN plug. But what I also like is that you've got tap tempo and the subdivisions button on there as well. So you can quickly go between the different subdivisions. And buffered or true bypass assignable per preset.
That's amazing. I thought it was just very cool. I didn't realize that was on there. Yeah, that's incredible. Matthew, I was going to say, quick question for you. When was it discovered that you could pass MIDI signal over TRS?
I don't know officially. I don't know whether it's been the case for a while. There's actually the MIDI Association, and it's like an actual board of people who are all... What? That basically represent everything MIDI, because the one big thing
NASA
happened,
but for MIDI.
Yes, basically, because the one thing that happened, big thing that happened for MIDI at NAMM was MIDI 2.0, which has been like years in the making, and that sort of everything is slowly becoming MIDI 2.0 compatible, which I think it just means that rather than having like 0 to 127, it's a much, much wider range.
Just when you thought MIDI couldn't get any better, they come
MIDI
out
couldn't
MIDI
get any
2.0.
More exciting. I mean, to be fair, it's never been updated since it came out in like 1977.
It's surprising when you think about it that we're only just about to get MIDI 2.0. We should be on like MIDI with a Vengeance or Live Fast Die MIDI.
I want to see that movie. But I mean, I've got to say with this, watching the demos, it just looks really pro. I mean, just the unit itself, it just looks solid. I really love how they've gone for like a much wider design rather than just going, oh, we can put something in this chassis that looks like Chase Bliss or whatever. You know, it's just gone, it's totally unique. And I think it sounds unique. Watching the demo, I was like, it doesn't sound like other modulation pedals. It's definitely got a vibe of its own. I think it's great. And really well priced, $299.
Really? $299?
Yeah. Yeah, that I think that's really, really well priced. I think it's going to be a really solid unit.
Yeah, it certainly is. And if you want to hear about that in more depth, listener, then in fact, this week's Friday special, we do have Alex Miller from Xander Circuitry on the Friday special with me and Matt. So we are talking to him in depth about the Junipero and all of his pedals as well on there. I was very excited to find out that and I should have put two and two together, but the Cafetiere is a harmonic percolator. But his pedal, the Cafetiere, is a harmonic percolator.
Yeah, yeah. Very smart. Very
there
cool.
was a fish in the harmonic percolator. Joe's really confused.
Yeah. Joe doesn't get you. That's a Twin Peaks reference, Joe.
Ah, I understand. Okay, yeah. That's good. All right.
It's episode one or two. I think it's episode one.
I think it's episode two. It's the pilot, maybe. Then episode one. I think it's episode two.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, whilst the guys argue about that has actually brought us to the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We successfully managed one and a bit. Bits of news this week.
It's a lot to talk about. I actually bought a guitar for once.
I know. That's true. You did. I want to buy a guitar for... No, that's always...
Yeah, yeah, that's every episode.
Yeah, unfortunately so. Anyway, you can, of course, catch more of this guitar nerdery over on our Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds. You can also find it in the description of this podcast. This week on our Patreon episode, Mark will be continuing his journey down Beatles memorabilia with his series Gear There and Everywhere. And to listen to that and become a Patreon supporter, you can... I need to not say it like that so that because you can't listen to it for a dollar. But you can support us on Patreon for as little as a dollar a month. There are three tiers, the dollar, the $5, and the $10 tier. A dollar a month will get you the regular episode ad-free and early. The $5 tier gets you access to our massive back catalogue of over 500 episodes, including Mark's new series, plus the regular episode ad-free and early. And at $10 a month, you get all those things, plus you get your name sung in the podcast outro song by me. Well, you can follow us on all the major social platforms with @GuitarNerds, and you can join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers, gang. Kennedy, Christopher Lloyd, Seth Hans, Derek Winch.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.